has done science, he has done programs, he has done consultancy work, he has done policy work and advocacy work. He really is particularly knowledgeable about developing country health systems. He's a fascinating speaker and a great thinker, Dr. David Peters.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sevgi. I think this is, must be the fourth or fifth time that you've asked me to talk about complexity. So I can only assume that you're very patient and you're hoping eventually I'm going to be able to get it right. So today I'd like to talk a little... I'd like to talk just a little bit about complexity and then spend a little more time about how we take advantage of understanding of complexity and complex adaptive systems for future work in STD HIV prevention, particularly on the science of that. So to begin with, ceci n'est pas une épidémie, with apologies to Magrette, whose pipe is up there. This is a graphic of the HIV prevalence globally and over a certain period of time. And the point is really to show you that this is a picture of an epidemic. It is a model, and that we are constantly thinking in models to help us understand representations of reality. And of course, we've just gone through some mathematical modeling of that. Complexity isn't, and complexity models aren't completely unknown to the field of HIV. This is a network diagram of HIV transmission that is used in complex adaptive systems. But then there are also simpler models that are used. And since Jeff didn't show you any of his maths, I thought I would show one of his models here. And with a notice, I think you can say that simplicity is in the mind of the beholder as well. But here's his basic simple model. Well, see, I couldn't even. So there is a plus down. Yeah. Well, there you go. We can complicate it. So to make things even more difficult, in science there are, of course, very different definitions for these terms of simple, complicated, complex, and chaotic than what we use in common English. And what I've put up here are the common English understandings. And now I'd like you to forget them all, because I'd like to talk about what we mean about these terms in science. So in a simple model, this is basically one where you have few agents or few elements or variables in an epidemiologic model that have relative stable relationships between these variables, and there's relatively well-known types. And in epidemiology, we look at causal confounding and effect modifications, and we can model them with some predictability either through deterministic models or more commonly through statistic models and using probability patterns, probabilities that you can estimate. So, you know, visually this looks like a simple and quite elegant model. If we move on to the complicated field, this is not where we want to go. Einstein, in talking about science, has said that science, you want to make everything as simple as possible, but not simpler. And so when you look at complicated models, this is what often we're trying to avoid in science. You have many elements, but you don't really understand their relationships and they're unstable. They do not have adaptation, and we'll talk about what that means when we talk about complexity. And it's really hard to fit with statistical prediction. So you don't really have a good model for complicated models. So this is something that we try, when you're faced with a complicated problem, you try to put some kind of order or other kind of model that you can understand. And this is really what it looks like when it's complicated. I tried to get one of Minneapolis getting around, but this is actually Los Angeles. Moving on, we have chaotic models, and this actually has an earlier history than more recent work in complexity. Chaotic models, many elements, they have dynamic relationships, they change, but what really matters is where you start off from, the initiating conditions, and this is what leads to what's known as the butterfly effect. You do not have adaptation or learning, and again, we'll come to that. But what you really see is you have this sort of apparent random appearance of things, but there is an underlying order, and it can be predictable to some degree through understanding the mathematical functions, or you know, either the fractal dimensions and the equations. So basically understanding where you start from and how things are going to change and how they're related to each other. And you get nice things like the butterfly effect, which we've heard about, where a butterfly flaps its wings in one place, creates a storm in another, and then in this case the evil butterfly is satisfied. So I think you can make a movie out of this too, but I haven't seen it. But anyway. So the guy who first went into, the meteorologist, Lorenz, who first got into chaos theory, actually tried to simplify, I think about 12 equations to look at water flow and then graph them, and it would come up with very nice diagrams looking like this. Or here's another famous chaotic system where the initial picture, and basically there's an equation that shows how these things change over time, and there's a symmetry to it, and actually a relationship between the dimensions of each parts. And this is chaos. And I think that's all I really need to stay from that, about that, and then move on to what we, I think, is much more an appropriate set of models, which is around complexity. So complex models are ones that have many elements again. They are changing, they have changing relationships, or they're metastable, they're stable over some periods and then change, but they act as a system, and that's important. In complex systems, they act as a system. They have what's called emergent properties. They self-organize, or they can learn, so they adapt to learn. And there is some predictability, but not in great detail. And you can predict by seeing the kinds of patterns of change that emerge. And these are where the concepts of path dependence, phase transition, scaleful networks, etc., occur. And I'll come back to these in a moment. So mention that they occur in a system, and this is important because in a system the parts are connected, so if you change one part, another part responds and changes to that, and the parts operate towards a purpose. And you contrast that with a non-system where the parts are independent and they don't influence each other, and there is no explicit purpose. So in a health system it's defined by that purpose being related to health. Now the patterns of change in a complex system are, you have some common types of changes. So one of them is this sort of feedback or cascading or domino effect where an outcome feeds back into its precursor and then back to each other, and it sort of rolls and you get that domino effect. Scale-free networks, I think we already showed that basically you have these kind of networks that have properties where you have hubs and spokes that move on. Path dependence is a situation where you may start at A and you get early decisions may take you down to a different path to B, C, or D, and you can't necessarily go back. They are often irreversible. So early decision matter, and that they're sometimes irreversible. And sometimes you see this, it's commonly looked at in terms of technology. For instance, why we end up with this QWERTY keyboard here as opposed to something else is often shown as an example. You often also see it in institutions, how you make some policies or institutional changes early on, and you can't just simply copy them from one place to another. So if you have a successful program in one place, you can't just say, well, I know how to work in with sex workers in India, I can't do the same in Ghana. I have a community health worker program in one place, I can't simply copy it in another place. Or some mechanisms of insurance or quality assurance type of things. These institutions are not simply transferable from one place to the other, even if you'd like to learn from them. And that's important to understand in complex adaptive systems. The other one is this emergent behavior, which you see down on the bottom there, which is basically self-organizing by the elements themselves. And examples of this are things like the flocking of birds, who can organize themselves to move as a unit. But you often see this in human behavior, where things you just didn't plan for, and they organize themselves. Anyway, if you've ever worked with in a complex labor situation and you see how certain rumors can lead to a strike, that's the kind of self-organization that occurs that you can expect, but you can't really plan in detail. And phase transition are either qualitative or quantitative changes in the nature of the entity. So, in physics or physical sciences, looking changes from liquid to gas and solids, and or changing from knowledge information to from data are different kinds of phase transitions that are common in the sciences. Okay, so when you talk about complex adaptive systems or CAS, you actually realize that most biological and social systems that have many interacting parts in a changing environment are actually complex adaptive systems. So we really should be using or understanding these systems more when we do our work and research in HIV and STD prevention, for example. I'm going to skip this. These are the kind of CAS characteristics I've discussed, and move on to why these kind of CAS models are relevant to HIV programs. So in the first place, we often recognize a situation where you can do a study or an intervention in one place in a small setting or a small scale or in a research setting or in one country, and you can't just simply replicate the same kind of results on another scale or in another place. We really don't have control. This is not a closed system over behaviors, either of communities or individuals or health providers for that matter. The real world doesn't work that way. And that even the simplest type of intervention often involves complex social interaction, and that's certainly true for anything with dealing with STDs or complex or behaviors. The other thing is that in many cases, small stimuli can produce large effects, and large programs can totter along or steamroll along, but still have very little or small effects. And unintended consequences, divergent outcomes, are really the hallmark of these kind of programs. So if you want to do research on this, you need to be able to move beyond just the description of what happens and try to understand why they happen. And looking at what causes complexity, if you look at the system elements, there are four types of characteristics that need to be understood and researched if you're trying to figure out how complexity occurs. So one of them is diversity of the actors, the different elements, whether these be different kinds of patients or providers, organization, services, how connected they are from one to the other, how close is one person, organization to another, and how interdependent are they? How do they influence each other? Does one provider, do they simply copy how each other works? Do sex workers follow the same kind of advice from peer counselors? How do they actually influence each other? And then what's the degree to which they are learning or adapting, creating new structures? And interestingly, except for the last, the diversity through interdependence, complexity occurs when you get something in the middle. If you get extreme values, you actually get very simple responses. And complexity is really an interesting issue of what happens in the middle of diversity and interdependence and connectedness. And putting it into a kind of, now, the research paradigm for how you would research complex adaptive systems in an HIV program, we start off with a model like this, where your STD program is the perturbation to the system, and you see it sort of feeding back or interacting with the health system itself, health and social systems, in a complex way. You will have these initiating conditions, which may be what David Wilson was talking about in terms of that intelligence gathering, so you understand the epidemiologic conditions, but you also the type of, often the PESL, the political, economic, social, technological, legal, and environmental conditions in which you are working, sort of the systematic way in which you look at context. Then you have your health and social systems with its four characteristics of diversity, connectedness, interdependence, and learning. And you have a set of outcomes, some of which are intended, like changes in sexual behaviors or uptake of STD services or changes in STD HIV status and improvements in mortality. And then you have a lot of unintended consequences that you know you can look for. Things like distorted health services that can only provide VCT or HIV services and nothing else. But you may also get synergies where being able to bring in people for really good STD services allows you to do a lot more with, say, family planning or with child health services. You also have a problem with very successful projects that are totally unsustainable, that tend to distort the market of who actually provides and pays for services. As soon as the project's over, it's done for, and then you've created a vacuum. So unsustainability is another problem. And drug resistance, a predictable but also not exact science about when they occur, is the other type of outcome, unintended outcome that you want. On the bottom there, you see the types of patterns of change, and that's what you, again, as researchers try to model. On the left, you have the non-complex. The disorganization is the complicated figure you'd like to avoid. The linear and other equilibrium models are more typically done in the research that we do in public health and economics. And the complexity types of patterns of change are really those other kinds of patterns that occur. On the bottom, you see that there are that as time passes, you really need to have multiple observations over time because, again, complexity is about dynamism, things changing over time. So this is sort of a model for things, if you were looking from a CAS complex system, things you would have to incorporate into your research model. So what are the implications for STD science? Well, if the research question is around those confirmatory things of what works, what's the effect, what's the efficacy, the question you might want to be looking at is what are the unintended consequences, such as what happens to key system actors like sexual partners or health providers or the relationship between them? How does that change? And really looking for effects other than the main outcome. Knowing where to look, there are tools available in system science for basically systematic inquiry into those kind of questions. The other impact then, or the other important part about understanding CAS is even if you do a study that looks at the effect or efficacy, there are some implications in how you interpret and use the data. So first of all, you should be skeptical about stable effect sizes. Or cost effectiveness for any kind of intervention or program if it has characteristics of CAS, because it is likely to be different in a different place, and over time it is likely to change. So the notion that you have stable cost effectiveness ratios is really just a snapshot of something that occurs in a particular point in time, and doesn't, if you're managing a program, doesn't get you off from the important work of continuing to monitor what happens to your cost effectiveness. As scientists and program people, we want to be careful of the fallacy of misplaced concreteness, that just because you've been able to succeed doing the same thing in one context, that you can do it again. Of course, in science, we like to repeat experiments to get confidence over these things, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we can keep going this way. And in fact, with CAS systems, you will realize that eventually you will fail. The other thing is that actually challenges some of our notions of causality and things like quality of evidence for things that occur under conditions of CAS. So Bradford Hill criteria or size of the effect being a measure of quality really work when you have stable, repeatable, simple types of systems, and the more complicated or complex it is, the less relevant that is, and that really is a challenge to those of us who are trained in a certain way about in epidemiology, for example. So if you're going to ask other questions, CAS models are also very appropriate. Asking how an intervention works, asking how do you intervene in complex conditions, how to grow, scale up, sustain programs, these are the types of issues that are much more amenable to CAS models. This is a text-heavy picture that I'm not expecting you to assess, but just basically to point out that in addition to confirmatory types of hypothesis, if you have explanatory or exploratory types of questions, you can use qualitative, quantitative, and more frequently mixed methods that combine the two in ways that are appropriate for CAS conditions for complex adaptive systems. And that we have a set of tools that are there that need further development, but you're not starting from scratch. The other implication for research or change of programs in STDs is that if you are looking at situations that are complex and you're trying to understand complex patterns, you have to be looking for things like emergent behavior, looking for path dependency, and trying to see if you can get phase transitions in terms of an uptake of a program where all of a sudden there is a demand for a service or the demand to be tested or people are going to change the way they behave. The question about what do you capture in changes, this is what Jeff was saying about the importance of actually measuring during implementation. You need to know how the strategy is changing in its intensity, where it's being implemented, and are people learning as they go along? What's happening to the influence of certain actors, particularly influential actors, the capabilities of implementers, and how the incentive structure is changing for people over time? Looking at changes in the environment and trajectories of different types of intermediate outcomes and impact is important, as well as the unintended consequences at the end. So these are the kinds of questions you want to build into your research when you go into it thinking that you're dealing with a complex system. Another challenge practitioners need to worry about as they are going along is really what is the kind of design and role for researchers and practitioners that don't unduly interfere with what you expect our learning processes, for example, for scaling up of implementation. You know, there are participatory methods where the researchers are totally embedded and become the participant researchers themselves, whereas others you want to be really a little bit distant and trying to observe a little more in terms of the implementation itself. So again, this sounds complex because it is, but it can be, we're trying to have it as simple as possible because it's not, it is not as if there are, people don't intuitively understand the complexities in which they work and that there are tools available for this. The opportunities by explicitly looking at using complex adaptive systems is it provides new openings for looking at leverage points, phase transitions for sudden uptake. How do you reach marginalized populations or tipping points for scaling up are really what, you know, the type of thing that CAS models are good for. It should be able to give us the benefit of giving a better understanding of the dynamics of STD transmissions and the relationships between health systems, the contextual factors and outcomes in health, looking at root causes and multi-sectoral determinants, which promote the spread of innovation or change, should be able to give us better understanding of intended and unintended consequences, as well as, I think, new tools to understand decision-making, facilitate decision-making. And finally, the other implication that CAS has for programs is something that I think program managers have wanted all along, and that is more flexibility in what they do to be able to address dynamic and adaptive properties of a health system or in a program, and part of this is necessarily being able to use data in frequent cycles of adaptation, experimentation, and planning that involves the key players. So, thank you very much.
David, thank you very much. I think I'm beginning to slightly understand complex adaptive systems. Maybe after two more lectures, I'll be able to pose some questions for you. It was very interesting, though, listening to you and remembering what I was hearing during the CROI conference regarding male circumcision programs in Africa, that in some places there is such sudden demand creation that sufficient numbers of circumcisions cannot be completed with the available health staff. And other places, uptake is so little that there's calls for demand creation. So clearly, you were talking about how we cannot expect the same thing happen in different systems and the sudden uptake issue. I mean, this is what's being discussed intensively right now. We have questions. Dr. Blanchard.
Thank you, David, for... I think I've seen parts of this presentation here and there, but... actually, a question I have is, although I think a lot of us can understand the importance of the concepts in complex adaptive systems, I think I'm still struggling with how that should inform where we take our research priorities and how can we systematically develop a research program or a research agenda around complex systems. And one thing that occurred to me, and I actually think the placing your talk with Jeff's talk might offer some options here. I think as you described it, complex adaptive systems sort of display properties that are sort of beyond or different from what you might expect. And I'm wondering whether we should take more advantage of looking for where things have happened that we wouldn't have otherwise predicted, which assumes that you've done some work on predicting the way things ought to be, whether you're looking at it from the way the health system or a program rolls out, or whether you're looking at where the epidemiology or the epidemic is sort of different from what you would predict. And I'm wondering whether we shouldn't take better advantage of trying to look for those outliers or those events, those phenomena that are occurring that are beyond or different from what we would otherwise expect or predict, and trying to be more systematic in understanding when things happen that way as at least one purchase point for developing a research agenda, but I'd like to hear your sort of comments on where you think, how you think we could sort of develop a research agenda around complex adaptive systems.